So we're in the book of Hebrews, and we're looking at chapter 11, verses 22 to 31. If a person has been in any of my classes, and they are inclined toward it, they have played tennis with me, they played pool with me, they played ping pong with me. I had one such man who was in college way back. He was starting a Bible study while he was in college, and then that turned into a church. And he had the church in South Miami. And we kept in touch back and forth, and we kept on playing tennis after he graduated. We would have prayer time. I'd preach for him, and just a wonderful time together. And one day he called me and said, Rev, everybody called me Rev, I need some money to build a church. They were meeting in a hen house. Now, you know the kind of fun you can have with that one. The old hens in the hen house, a good size, and they could get in maybe 75 people. But he called and said, hey, we need some money for our church. I said, well, why didn't you tell me? I'll talk to my father about it. He said, oh, yeah? Yeah, my father has helped a lot of people build churches all over the place. And I think he had a little suspicion right then, but I said, no, I'll talk to him, and maybe he'll give you some money. Then he said, what business is your father in? I said, he's in the cattle business. Then he owns a cattle on 1,000 hills. So, then I just feel it in his voice. Oh, just God is all you're talking about. It's funny because later on, God did give him a church. I mean, a nice church, huge thing. You know how he got it? God sent a saint, not a living saint. A saint came through there and enabled him to have a church. Remember, he's in South Miami, 1992. Saint Andrew came through there, and as a result of that, he had a new church. Now, that seems impossible. He had a beautiful piece of land, but he had no money. All of a sudden, they have a church. Not because of the way they did things, not because of anything they did, or my earthly father, but he and I had prayed, and the church had prayed too, I'm sure. And God gave him a church. The impossible thing. Well, today we want to see some attempting great things for God. You have an outline in your bulletin. You may follow along. Of course, we have it on the screen as well. Now, we learn in this section three things. The first one is faith attempts the impossible. Faith attempts the impossible. We're talking here about passing through the Red Sea. This is verse 29. By faith, they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, whereas the Egyptians attempting to do so were drowned. Now, you get a picture here, and you know this. This is a story, if you didn't hear it in the Bible, you heard it on the movie screen. The Lord had delivered them from the Egyptians, or had he? They weren't delivered very far. They walked for a few days, it seems, while the Egyptians were mourning their dead and burying their dead, because remember, God had killed the firstborn. And while they were doing that, these people came out. And you don't sneak out with 2 million people and with all your cattle and your sheep and your babies and travel around. And the situation is that they were in a place where there's a mountain on each side. The Red Sea was in front of them. And the Egyptians, having recovered from everything, realized what was going on, came after them, and they were in behind them. Now, you can't get much more impossible than that. What are you going to do? They were like the Marine sergeant. Fred was a Marine. The Marine platoon leader. And he said to his men when they were surrounded by the enemy, he said, okay, men, we've got them where we want them. They won't get away this time. That's the way they were. Yeah. And Moses could have said the very same thing. They won't get away this time. So that was their situation. But, you know, there was some sarcasm involved as well. Because the people said, is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you brought us out here to bury us? What is this? They didn't believe him. But then there was a solution, too. There was a word to the people. And the word to the people was, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord work. Remember, it's the Lord. It's not Moses. Moses is not going to do it. Trust in the Lord. And then the word to Moses was, stretch forth your rod and divide the sea. He hadn't done that before. But the work of God was to take care of them in the process. The pillar of cloud that was over them and from which they followed went around behind them and brought darkness to the troops. They didn't know where they were going. And then the angel of the Lord also went back there to fight for them. How many angels do you need to fight an army like that? One will do. One killed 185,000 Assyrians one time. So, one angel can handle that. Only this was the angel of the Lord. Probably the person of Jesus Christ pre-incarnate. Then the Egyptians looked at that and said, this is the surprise. The Egyptians looked around and said, if the Hebrews can do it, so can we. Into the breach they went. And that was a wide breach, and probably 20 miles wide, because you can't get 2 million people through there without that. So they're saying, oh, we can do that. Let's go. So they went. And Psalm 77 tells us what happened. God sent a rainstorm. The Jews went through on dry ground. But God sent a rainstorm that made the bottom of that sea soggy, their chariots bogged down, and they couldn't retreat, they couldn't go forward, and then at daybreak, the waters came over and drowned them all. That's quite a surprise. See, attempting the impossible worked. But then faith also obeys the ridiculous. Verse 30 and Joshua 6. Just a very simple statement in verse 30. By faith, the walls of Jericho came down after they were encircled for 7 days. Now, the city of Jericho, it was small in miles. It was only probably 9 acres. I think this is probably a little better than 2 acres. 3-4 times the size of this plot. That's how big that city was. But it was really had walls around them. Like the outer wall was 6 feet thick. 6 feet thick. The space of 12 to 15 feet, and then there was another wall. And that wall was 12 feet thick and 30 feet high. And God had said to Joshua, I'm going to give you this. I've already given it to you. It's yours. So, and it came to pass, this is the appearance of the Lord. Joshua was out walking in the night, and it came to pass when Joshua was by Jericho, he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, a man stood opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said to him, what would you say to somebody like that? The sword drawn? Well, I think this is a good question. Are you for us or for the adversaries? Are you for us or for them? I think that it's a good question, but he didn't answer that. It's a multiple choice question. Us or them? Which one? And he answered like a true-false. No. What do you mean no? Neither one. See, it's a wrong question, really. A better question would be not whose side is the Lord on, but who is on the Lord's side. That's what he needed. Who's on the Lord's side? Are you on God's side? See, it's not, well, is God on our side? No, no. You get on God's side. He doesn't come to you. You come to him. And then the assurance of the Lord. Joshua 6:2. And the Lord said to Joshua, see, I have given Jericho into your hand, its king and the mighty men of valor. He gave them to him. What? What am I going to do? Walls, 12 feet thick, 30 feet high. What am I going to do? Well, here are the instructions. You follow God's instructions. First, he said, march around the city. How many times did they march around the city? 13 times. Somebody heard this before. 13 times, not 7. 7 days. And the last day, the 7th day, there were 7 times. So that's 13 times they walked around. Walking around, the whole group, everybody, get in line, walk around. Then you do something else, which is a little strange. I think ridiculous. Make a strong blast on the ram's horn. Every time you go around, apparently all the way around, make a strong blast on the ram's horn. Oh, the people were scared to death inside and probably outside as well. Then the people were supposed to give a great shout. Then the walls will fall down. That's not the first time, not the second time, not the 12th time. The 13th time, when you've obeyed God all the way down, then comes the walls down. And then the people will go up, every man before him, not every man through the gate, but wherever you are around the city, the walls are falling down, and you can walk right on up there, right into the city, and do what you're supposed to do. Now, that's a strange bunch of instructions. Then, the cooperation of the people. The people did as they were told. Now, that is a first for them. Do as you're told all the way through. They remember, it's been 40 years now, 41 years probably, since they started out from Egypt. And they had tempted the Lord the first year. They tempted the Lord 10 times. Didn't believe him, but they did what they were told. That's probably a bigger miracle. And then the destruction of the city. Every man went straight up before him. Now, under the orders of God, they killed everything alive in there. Every man, every woman, every little baby, all the donkeys, all the cattle, everything by God's order. Was it right to do that? Absolutely. If God says so, you do it. And that's what they did. And they utterly destroyed all that was in the city. Both man and woman and young and old and ox and sheep and donkeys with the edge of the sword. That was quite a slaughter, but they did it. Because faith obeys even the ridiculous. And then third, faith receives the incredible. Verse 31. By faith, the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe when she had received the spies with peace. Now, two events of Joshua 2. First, the spies were sent out. They stayed at Rahab's house. You remember this? They went to Rahab's house. She was a prostitute. She was a harlot, is what it says. And they went there and stayed at her house, probably because she was willing to have somebody stay. Here are two men. Oh, let them stay in my house. And she did. They stayed there. When somebody knocked, came on the door, she hid them under the flax that were on the roof. And then they said, well, because you've done this, we'll spare you. You and your family, everybody in your family will be spared if you do this, if you help us. So they went to the west. After the men came, she let them down a rope because she was on the outside of the wall, let them down, and then later on they returned back to Joshua. Now, that was quite a thing for her to do because she risked being killed by her own people. She didn't know this whole thing was going to turn out that way. And so she did that. She received, by faith, the incredible. First of all, she was a Gentile. Now, she was an unlikely heroine, really. She was a harlot, idolater, a liar, and sometimes the enemy is your friend, and this happened, that'd be the case. She did what she knew to do. She believed that Jehovah was the true God. You know that? She believed in Jehovah. And here's what it says in Joshua. I know, she says, I know that the Lord has given you the land, that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to those two kings of the Amorites who were on the other side of Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted within us. Neither did there remain any more courage in any one of us. Because the Lord your God, he is God in heaven and in earth. That, folks, is her salvation. She believed in God. She believed in the Jehovah who had done all these things. She believed that. That's her salvation. She was justified before God. Now, she acted on her faith. Now, let me say something about the lie of Rahab. She told a lie. They said, are the men in your place? No, they're not here. And it wasn't anything, well, they're on the roof or what. No, they weren't here, and she lied. Now, the lie of Rahab was recorded. The Bible records all the warts and wrinkles of everybody, and the lie was reported. But it wasn't approved. There's no indication that God said, I want you to lie. God has a way to do things in spite of that. But she did lie. And the Bible approved of her faith, not her lie, of her faith by the good works, but not her falsehood. Now, I just read that out of the Bible Knowledge Commentary by Lou Barbieri, one of my classmates at seminary. She hid the spies, sent them out the other way, And she was justified by her works before the men, before spies. I'm making a big distinction here. There is a justification by faith before God. There is a justification by works before men. Here's what it says. Now, note this. There is a by faith justification. There is a by works justification. But there is no such thing as a by faith and works justification. And I read that from Hodges, Zane Hodges, James, page 71. There's no such thing as salvation, justification, by faith and works. It doesn't go. We've already taught James, and James is on our website. Go look at that. It's free. So she was rewarded. She got the incredible. Her life was saved. All those people who were there, now I don't know how many were in there, probably not very many in 9 acres, except that all the people from around probably came in. When the Israelites started across the thing, all the little places or villages around, they probably came in for safety. A lot of people there. And of all those people, her life was saved and her family, and that's it. Nobody else. Everyone else died. And she became a member of the line of Messiah. What a privilege. She is in the line of the Messiah. And there were three other women in there with her, by the way, of questionable character. Bathsheba, adulteress. Ruth was a Gentile, a godly lady, but a Gentile. Tamar was a prostitute. And all of that was on the earthly level. She got all the privileges, got her life saved, life for her family, and got placed in the line of Messiah. That's earthly things. And that was wonderful. I think that's great. Maybe that's enough. No, because God does more than that. She'll be rewarded yet. She'll be rewarded. Her faithfulness will be rewarded in the millennial kingdom. You know? And I puzzled on this. We read a lot in the New Testament about what's going to happen. We're going to rule and reign with Christ. We're going to do all kinds of things with him. And they're all promised throughout the New Testament. But how did the Old Testament figure in? Then I thought, wait a minute, it's their kingdom. Of course, they're going to be a part of it as well. And I don't know all the things that are there, but she'll be ruling and reigning. You know me in hymns, too. I love this hymn. The hymn, Still Sweeter Every Day. Chorus or stanza, refrain of that. It says this, the half cannot be fancied. The word fancied simply means imagined. The half cannot be imagined, this side the golden shore. Oh, there he'll be still sweeter than he was the day before. See? And I think what he was talking about was 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 8, verse 9. Eye has not seen nor ear heard, neither has it entered into the heart of men the things that God has prepared for those who love him. Of course, the next verse is, and God has revealed them to us by his Spirit. You want to know what God has prepared for you? You won't learn it all. Probably not the half. But you'll learn some things by the Word. But we can't do it apart from the Word. I heard a preacher this morning bemoaning the fact that people didn't know the Word. They don't know what they believe, don't know why they believe it. And he was going on and on about that. He didn't teach them anything. You got to teach them the Word. And where are you going to learn it? Well, they'll learn it. They'll study by themselves. Of course they will. You've got to give them something to study. We have to study that. And the more we study, the more we learn of the things that God has prepared for us. And one day, we're going to get up there and say, man, I didn't get any of this. Boy, what a surprise this is. And we'll be there every day, forever. And I think something new every day. New. Forever. Something new. God cannot be fathomed. Not even in eternity. We'll keep on going and going and going. So, what are you going to do? Go out in all the world. That's what it says back there. Go and make disciples of all nations in the whole world. Are we going to do that? Of course, we're doing that. Missions. Through our missions program, through the prayer and the giving that we have, we reach the whole world with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Make disciples of all nations. How are we going to do that? Can we do it? Of course we can do it. Do you know National Bible College has a branch in Singapore, Mauritius, in Liberia, and India, yeah, all over the place. And Pennsylvania. I got a call just the other day in Pennsylvania. The man said, my people can't afford the tuition. I said, brother, you can use our material and run your own college. Okay, I'll run my own. So that's what he's doing. Friday, Suzanne and I went to a hotel over here. I mean, a meeting at the hotel there. And we carried a lot of things with us, and there was a meeting of pastors there. And I got to talk to the pastors about what was going on, how they can become a branch. Each one of those pastors, the leader of the group, said, I want you all to have a branch of National Bible College in your church. Great. We're starting one in my church, September. Well, that happens all over the place. It's happening. Why? Because this church has a ministry called National Bible College. Well, can you overcome every situation in your life? You can with God's help. Right? Can you overcome that big problem you're facing? What is it? Oh, your health problem. Oh, God can't handle that. You know, of course he can. Your finances. We may see some more financial problems down the road. That's one of those impossible things, right? God can do it. My marriage, I don't know, whatever. God can handle that. See, he's the God of Joshua, the God of Moses, the God of Hagar. Right? He can help. He wants to help. He will help if we, by faith in him, will trust him to do so.